Hi, Greg Barth back with another edition of Noir on the Radio. And joining me for tonight's show is author Robert Knott. And Robert Knott is an actor, writer, and producer, as well as the author of the New York Times bestsellers Robert B. Parker's The Bridge, Bull River, Iron Horse, and Blackjack. His extensive list of stage, television, and film credits include the feature film Appaloosa, based on the Robert B. Parker novel, which he adapted and produced with actor and producer Ed Harris. His latest release is Revelation, which continues the Robert B. Parker Hitch and Cole Western series that began with Appaloosa. Robert Knott, welcome to Noir on the Radio. Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be hooked up with you finally. We tried this a couple of times before, and it seems like to me we kept getting kicked off the air. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Thank you. Let's cross our fingers that the third time's is the charm. You know, first, I understand Blackjack recently won a literary award from National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum. So congratulations on the well-deserved recognition.
Thank you. Can you believe it? Yeah. I'm surprised that anybody in that whole group over there that gave me that award can read.
Well, it's well deserved in any event. So Robert,
well, thank you.
I was
very, very proud of that. Sorry, I'm talking over you. Go ahead.
It's perfectly fine. We want to hear you. So just take off. You know, as a screenplay writer, producer, assistant director, I know you were quite heavily involved in the making of the film Appaloosa. Can you share with us how you came to write the novel series also?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I'll go back to the beginning, starting with the movie. I had never read a Robert Parker book before. I'd never read a Spencer book, and I'd never read a Jesse Stone book or a Sonny Randall book. For those listeners that don't know, Robert Parker, a very prolific crime fiction novelist, with 70 books under his belt, had written a couple of Westerns. And one Western that he wrote was called Appaloosa. And my friend Ed Harris, the wonderful actor and talented director, he read the book. He was on a horse trip, actually over in Ireland, and he picked up the book Appaloosa, written, "We need to make a movie of this." So I got the book. I called Ed, and I said, "Man, I believe this. It would be fantastic." And we called Robert Parker, and, you know, he told us, he was very skeptical. He said, "There's been so many people from Hollywood trying to make my movie, make my books into movies for so many years. Not one has ever done, been able to do it. And, but if you think you can do it, give it a shot." And within 6 months, Ed and I had a script, with New Line Cinema, which basically halfway through the production went into Warner Brothers. But we went right into production. We wrote the script. Ed and I produced it together. We wrote the script together. Ed directed it and acted in it. It starred Viggo Mortensen, Jeremy Irons, Renee Zellweger. Lance Henriksen had a wonderful cast. And to our credit, I think it's a great film. And it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival, had very good reception. And a few years after the film was out, Robert Parker passed away. He was sitting at his computer in his office, writing another book like he always had done for so many years. He passed away. And Ed and I visited his family for the memorial. And at the memorial, I was there with the publisher and his wife, Joan. And we were, you know, they were just talking about how they would like to see these, the legacy of Parker books carry on. And they asked me if I would be, well, not right there, not right on the point at that time, but a short time later, they asked me if I would continue writing the novels. And I said, look, I'm a screenwriter. You know, I haven't, you know, I've never written a novel before. And, but they said, well, would you give it a shot? And so there you have it. I wrote basically audition pages for them. They wanted to, it's kind of funny because they wanted to see me, see if I could, you know, put out, say, I said, well, how many pages? They said, well, give us 30 pages. This is the Putnam. They said, could you give us 30 more pages? And I said, sure. So I wrote 30 more pages. And then they said, could you write 30 more pages? And it kept going on like that. And I said, well, why don't I just write the damn book? Which I did. And there you have it. That started, that was Iron Horse. That was the first one. And, you know, it was, you know, it was a little difficult getting my sea legs with the editor, you know, so that we got on the same page. And, you know, I never set out to, can't copy somebody, but you can do your best to emulate their work. And I think that's what we've done here. And now we're on, I'm on the sixth book right now.
Very nice. I can't wait to, you know, to see what comes next. You know, just thinking of Appaloosa and those characters, you know, it's rare you see it, but it does happen where characters will kind of transcend the book that they start out in. It's almost like the characters are bigger than just the stories. And, you know, I think of Appaloosa as just such a fantastic film. And when I read the books, you know, those characters, Virgil, Everett, Allie, are so taken over by the actors, Ed Harris, Viggo Mortensen, Renee Zellweger. When I read about them, I can't picture them any other way. Is it kind of the same for you as a writer? How much do the actors contribute to your writing of the characters?
Well, that's a very good question, a good point. And the answer is quite a bit. You know, these two guys and Renee, as you said, they embodied these characters incredibly so, and they are such wonderful actors. The thing that was probably, you know, the more telling about these characters or than anything is what's not said. And so the both Viggo and Ed had, you know, a very, very good communication in their silence and the subtext. And, you know, I always think about when I'm writing a story, there's two things that are happening. There's a subtext and then there's the text, of course. And then, you know, there's always a story that's underneath, that's with inside the character, that's character driven. And those two guys, as you pointed out, those two guys embodied that so well that I could, as we went along, we took out more and more dialogue. It's interesting, you know, some of the greatest actors, you know, one of the things that they want to do is the first thing, like Steve McQueen used to say, well, this is great, I'll take this part, but, you know, cut out 75% of the dialogue. Not because they're not capable of dialogue, not because it's not something that could be, you know, essential and good dialogue that moves the story along, but there's so much that can be done without. And actually, if you, for those of your listeners that have read any of these Parker Western books, my books, or Bob's originals, there is a lot of sparse language. The language is very, very, very minimal. Viggo, or you know, personifying these two characters. Was more than anything, has been really good fuel for me in continuing to write these books. Those two guys, for sure.
Wow, yeah, and the books are written from Hitch's point of view. but Cole is, you know, he's the driver of most of the action, and Hitch, you know, seems to be the witness telling the story, although he participates in a big way. But I'd also say that, you know, maybe Hitch is the more complex of the two. How would you describe, you know, their friendship and overall dynamic of these two men?
Well, that's an interesting question, I think, because for me, they've evolved and they've changed. You know, from Appaloosa, they had been, you know, itinerant lawmen, had been working together for some 10-odd years, going into small towns, cleaning up things. And by the time we get around to Iron Horse, they are now working as marshals. So they are, you know, they've grown in the respect of their duty as lawmen has changed somewhat. They were a bit more renegade in the beginning. They'd go in and set up their own rules and do as they pleased. And Virgil was, Virgil was kind of adolescent in a way, you know, and kind of bullheaded and pretty temperamental. And I believe over a period of time, he's become softer. He's more compassionate. He's become more evolved. You know, I think if you remember, he was really in the Appaloosa book. He was really involved in reading and sort of learning, you know, book learning, so to speak. And with Hitch, I think that, you know, he's growing too, as not necessarily being so much under Virgil's shadow now. He's becoming he's coming more into the forefront. And he too is, you know, evolving as a sensitive character. I think as the guys get older and wiser, you know, they're a little just more compassionate.
I like that. I like the evolution of the characters. You know, there are those series out there like, you know, James Bond or something along those lines where the character never changes, but, you know, it keeps it real. If you can watch the characters evolve as they gain experience. I want to get to your latest novel, Revelation, just released, you know, a few months ago by Putnam. And for the listeners who may not be familiar with that one yet, can you kind of set it up for us?
Well, you know, Revelation is the first book that doesn't worry over Hitch's shoulder, you know, if you remember. The central antagonist, if you will, and comes from, a third person, another voice. And that was a departure, you know, from the previous books, all of them, you know, by the way, let me go back. If you remember, the movie Appaloosa is also all told from Hitch's point of view. You never see Virgil. You never see anything that's not within his purview at all. This one, this lettuce book that you're referring to, Revelation, I'm able to move the story along with two different points of view. And I really like this. First of all, as a writer, and for those of you who write, you know, it's pretty limiting when you're telling a story from one person's point of view. You don't have quite the leeway that you would get for, you know, in a third person storytelling. But so this one combines, you know, effort as a storyteller, and then also we're over the shoulder of our, and I say over the shoulder, that's my screenwriter's term, for following the character and an opposing character. So I think that this book is, I love this book. real change. And to go back to what we were talking about, too, about the evolution of the characters, I also like to incorporate changing time periods in these books. You know, like we've lived in this age so far right now where we all of a sudden, you know, we're living with cell phones. All of a sudden we're living with internet. Next thing you know, there's Facebook. Next thing you know, there's Twitter. You know, all of these things, you know, have changed our world dramatically. And there, you don't see that a lot in the Western world or the Western movies that have been made in the past. Been a few that, you know, the hat to, oh, there's an automobile, you know, here comes the automobile. And but there were incremental changes, you know, throughout, you know, the Western expansion, you know, from 1847, you know, the edge of the universe was St. Louis. And then when everything started pushing across, it wasn't just all dust and lawless and you know, buffaloes and, you know, Native American bands, warring factions, you know, High Plains drifters. It wasn't all that. You have to think about that. All of the people that pushed across the West, you know, came from a history with a lot of history. You know, they came from Germany or Ireland or England. And so those cultures were a big part of the cultures of the West, too. So also, you know, like say, for instance, you know, I love the idea of thinking about corporations, thinking about, you know, insurance companies, thinking about magazines and newspapers, thinking about things that happened on the railway and the changes of the railroads and all that. Like the time zones came about because of the railroads, you know. Towns are basically 10 miles apart in this country because that's how far the train can go before it could get water and fuel. All of those things, I think, I like to see incorporated into these books. It's not just shoot 'em up, you know.
Yeah, you do see the evolution of the country as well. I think there might have been a scene where they were talking about just how many people there were, you know, out there now. Mm-hmm. And I think back to, you talk about people bringing their history with them, and I think that's even captured in the film, just the variety of the things you see in the background, like you know, paintings on the wall or just some of the small details. I think you capture that quite well in both the movie and the books. In Revelation, I like the idea of the men chasing down, I think there were 8 or 9 escaped prisoners, and you know, it made for a lot of confrontation. And you learn a good bit about Cole as he rounds them up. The example I'm thinking of when you're talking about softening Cole up a bit, there's a scene, I believe, where it's night and they're at a camp, and one of the prisoners they captured had bought some cigars earlier in the day, and he's tied up, but they're talking, and he kind of engages in the conversation, and Cole takes out a cigar and takes it to the guy and lights it for him. And, you know, Cole's a guy who doesn't say much at all, a lot of one-word sentences, but I think we see a lot about him through his actions and his unexpected actions, like in that scene of compassion. What were you going for, you know, in that scene?
Well, if you remember, that guy, this doesn't really give too much away for anybody that's listening to read the book, but that particular character, he had mentioned at one point in time he had got those cigars because it's something that it was important for him to celebrate, you know, and he had them taken away from him. and you know, his now he's, you know, arrested and just, you know, feeling like hell and dejected as one might be, you know, in that particular situation. And instead of, you know, allowing this person to endure the insufferable time, you know, Cole reaches out to him in that gesture that acknowledges him as a human being and as opposed to just being callous to, you know, what it was that the guy had been thinking about and, you know, what was, you know, on the guy's mind at the time when he got the cigars, et cetera. I don't know if that makes sense, but I think it does.
I think so too. Yeah. Without giving too much away. It was, you know, it was a nice scene. You know, the book is full of great scenes. So I'm thinking of, you know, something Stephen King said once. It was something along the lines of the Old West is the, you know, the mythological equivalent in America to the medieval genre in Britain. But it seems like, you know, the Western genre in publishing, more so than film probably, you know, seems to be undergoing a decline, you know, at least for those genre writers that, you know, aren't at the front of the bookstore like your books are. I wonder, do you have thoughts or opinions on the genre as a whole? Is there, you know, still a place for Westerns today? And why are they still relevant, even in a market that may not necessarily be thriving?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting you bring this up because I think right now, more than ever, having some connection to history and having a bit more a backstory for us right now as a culture and as a people of America, I think it's probably more important now than ever. In that respect, I think there might be, I hope so. I think you might be seeing more development in the Western. I don't know that I would have said this 5 years ago, or even 2 years ago, but I'll say it seems like, you know, with the polarization, with the sort of, you know, talk of our Constitution, the complexities and things that are happening right now, I just kind of feel like there's a need for us to all take a breath and, you know, get back to some of the qualities that, you know, pulled us together as opposed to the things that pulled us apart. And in that respect, I feel there's a lot to be said within the culture. And, you know, it's a bit difficult, you know, in terms of storytelling because there's so many media sensation or the demographics of media that, you know, have no real connection to that past. You know, like when I grew up, you know, the Western was such a fundamental part of storytelling for like my parents' generation that they were still connected to it. I mean, if you think about it, they're only a half a generation removed from that, you know, and now we're what, 1, 2, 3, 4. And the more you get away from it, the less effective I think that it is. But I think that it comes back around because it's like you open this conversation, the medieval world that Stephen King was talking about, you know, that, we don't seem to get tired of that genre. It keeps coming back and it exposes itself. So sometimes it might be a little more radical, like a Game of Thrones thing right now, but there's still those elements that are very, very solid.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. We do need to take a breath. There's so much division and tension right now. And, you know, the Western genre, perfect for those kinds of stories to take place. They're timeless. You know, if you look at a movie made, a thriller, say, in 95, you're going to see, you know, old devices, antiquated computers, et cetera. But if you watch a Western, you know, one of the best, those movies hold up forever. So I agree. I think that's a, would love to see a resurgent in that genre.
Well, I'm trying. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you, please.
No, I'm trying. You know, one of the things I was going to say is one place that one place that's probably easier to promote and sell Westerns is the market of television, which has grown dramatically, as we know, with 1,000 channels in every direction. So I think there's every opportunity for more storytelling. And I have a few shows right now, you know, in the works that, that that take us back period and doing my best to get them on. And there's just a little bit more, there's a little bit more highway, if you will, in television than there is in the feature film market. Feature films are, you know, driven by blockbuster films that come out every summer. The few handful of high sort of artistic films that come out in the fall, and then everything else is just sort of a mix of things that, that, you know, vary in budget and vary, vary marketability. And they're, it's very difficult to, you know, conquer that marketplace and those demographics, because they're very, very specific now. You know, you got the, like, you
yeah.
open up the newspaper right now, you got the Pirates of the Caribbean 5 or whatever, you know what I mean?
I do. I think TV is such an exciting place right now. I mean, if you like, if you want to watch a film for writing, you know, for dialogue, for acting, for, you know, camera technique, TV is the place to be, because the movies, it seems to be, you know, CGI, right? That kind of entertainment. But I'm very excited about a lot of the things going on TV, and I can't wait to see some of the things that that you're alluding to, that are in the works. Robert, thinking about writing and writing your novels, do you would you say you outline your plots, or you just kind of jump right in and start telling the story just to see where it goes on its own? Or?
Well, let me ask you this. Of 90% of the people, the guys that you interview, guys and gals that you interview, what's the answer to that, would you say?
I would say the majority do some outlining. Those who have written maybe, you know, 30 books or so don't. But I think that my take on it is I was never able to successfully get a novel across the finish line until I started reading about filmmaking, because the filmmakers understand the concept of story in a way that I think few novelists do. I think there's a lot more discipline in the screenplay writers. So that is, you know, I outline, not very extensively, but I think that that most of the writers I talk to also do, except for those who've been at it quite a while.
Well, I do not, and I'll tell you why. I think it goes back to, I think, what you said. I've written enough screenplays that I have story in my head. You know, I have an understanding of, you know, how it needs to build, where it needs to go to, what sort of conflicts need to happen at what particular, at what times, what resolves need to happen at what times, and, you know, what sort of, it's just like kind of a built-in structure, you know, that I think I've kind of developed over the years from, you know, working on screenplays. So, I kind of know when things need to hit the fan. And so I have those sort of fundamental elements, you know, locked into my mind, but I'm not necessarily sure how we're going to get there. If that makes sense.
And then I let my
characters sort of tell me how to get there, you know, and let, you
nice.
Know, the unfolding of the plots and let the mystery, you know. And I think also too, I found that when I plot things out or when I really sort of, you know, put together an outline or a template or whatever, that, I find myself thinking about it too much. You know,
yeah.
it becomes a handcuff more than anything for me.
I think that makes sense. Yeah. I think everybody's a little different. I like to have, you know, maybe three or four, you know, kind of big scenes in mind that I want to write toward. And then I'll have some outline to go to those too. It's certainly a different process for everybody, but I think having that fundamental understanding of, you know, the structure of story and how story works has definitely served you well. Which writers would you say have had the most influence on you as a storyteller?
Well, you know, I because character is king for me. Even though all the books that I've written are, I think it's pretty safe to say they're pretty, there's quite a bit of plot and whodunit in them. You know, there's a lot, I guess there's some mystery, I should say, to the storytelling that I've done with the novels. But in terms of reading, the things that I'm always more drawn to is, you know, very character-oriented stories that are not necessarily, you know, in the genre that I'm working in. And primarily, I guess I would say it's maybe because I came from a background of theater, you know, the playwrights, I think, have had more influence on me than anything. People like Harold Pinter, or Sam Shepard, or Edward Albee, or from that world. I know that's probably disappointing to all of your listeners who are, you know, avid novel readers. But I also do. You know, I read a lot of different. A lot of different things, a lot of different styles, and again, I'm probably more involved in reading things that that have a lot of historical background. Like I just recently finished T.J. Stiles' story of Custer's Trials, which is of course not a novel; it's a non-fiction book, but I mean, my God, it's so incredible, so well detailed.
Oh, sure.
In the history. Have you read that?
No, but I'm just thinking that it would be important to have a good understanding of history, just with the historical setting of your books, and then I think
yeah,
also
so,
the
yes.
you know, the, and I think also the strong dialogue that comes through in your books. You know, I can kind of see that as a screenplay writer, and you know, reading the playwrights, that that could influence your writing style as well. So it, I mean, it connects. It makes a lot of sense.
Well, you see, the interesting thing about playwriting to me is, you know, there's so much that's going on that, you know, builds. It goes back to what I was talking about before about subtext, you know, about what's not being said. And, you know, I don't think there's enough of that in a lot of novel work, quite frankly. We're I think we're beyond story to some degree. You know, just so much that gets involved with plot sometimes I think it's a little overdrawn. Because you're going to forget the plot, but you're going to remember the characters.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my preference, when you think in terms of subtext, are those novels that are almost cinematic. You know, it's like you see
mm-hmm.
what's happening, you hear what's happening, but you don't know every single thought that's going on
mm-hmm.
in all the characters' heads. You know, so it
mm-hmm.
kind of affords the opportunity to put some of that in. So, Robert,
but new and exciting? In terms of top, you know, novelists. I don't know. You know, I don't know, man. I like reading a lot of the old, a lot of our old writers. You know, the people that are, you know, come and gone. Always feel it's kind of like our duty to go back and, you know, check out some of those names and see, you know, just what they were and how they were written. And so always, I have a lot of nostalgia in that respect.
Yeah. So Robert, what new and exciting projects are you working on these days that maybe you can share some details about?
Well, let's see. There's a book that I optioned recently, written by David Joy, called Where All Light Tends to Go, that I'm developing into a screenplay right now. It takes place in the Appalachian Mountains, Jackson County, Silva, North Carolina, and it's a father and son story. David Joy is an incredible novelist, and he really has a voice, and he's created an incredible world with these characters. It's tough stuff. It's kind of Breaking Bad meets Winter's Bone. And
Yes, sir. Oddly enough, I just had David Joy on last week. What a
you did.
Fantastic guy! Yes, I'll send you the recording if you want to take a listen to it. But just a fantastic guy, writer, and I love his the two books that I've read of his fantastic. So that is exciting.
Yeah, what do you think? What do you think about that second one? That's pretty crazy, right?
Yeah. It's it was hard to put down, I thought. And Appalachian.
I've never really seen a book, the second book we're talking about, The Weight of the World, right? I've never seen I don't think I can't remember, you know, characters lead to, you know, a story like those two characters ever. You know, and I don't want to give anything away for your readers, but, you know, that's pretty insane. But the first
It's,
could,
yeah.
Point as a feature, right?
I'm sorry, go ahead. I missed what,
See,
I think
you
you cut out there
can
just
see,
a second.
you can see the first one as a feature, right?
Absolutely. I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah, so I got that going. I have a television show that I've been, you know, pushing Giancarlo as my partner. You know, he was the guy that was played the antagonist in Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Giancarlo and I have been trying to get a show off the ground that deals with the first black marshal west of the Mississippi, Bass Reeves.
Man, I can't wait to see that.
That's a
television
project.
You're in some exciting places, I tell you, Robert. I think it'd be great, you know, one day down the road to Where All Light Tends to Go, and this TV show, when they're, you know, up and ready, it'd be nice to get you and David Joy on a show together sometime, and let's talk through those.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah, he's a character. Yeah. I'd like to do that. That'd be great.
So where's the best place out there where listeners can find you on the web, you know, keep up with the exciting things you're working on?
Well, I think probably I'm not a big social media guy. I don't do the whole Facebook thing and all that stuff. The best place is probably through Robert B. Parker's website. They kind of keep tabs of things that's happening, what's going on. I'll probably be, you know, showing up on hopefully David's blog here soon too, just as we get this movie underway. So the next thing I can say outside of that is one of these days this television show that I'm working on, Bass Reeves as the first black U.S. Marshal west of the Mississippi, that's going to happen. Not sure what network. We were on History Channel there for a while, and they decided to go a different direction. So we're looking to find the right home for that. And have another show called Tulsa about the oil and gas industry in 1921 that Ed Harris and I are working on together. That'll be a television event, hopefully, a series as opposed to a limited series. I have another series that I've been working on based on a Ron Hanson novel called Desperados, the story of Emmett Dalton and the Dalton gang. That also stars Ed Harris. He's part of that with me. I have another one that I wrote for, that was for FX, that one, the Desperados.
Okay.
I did another one called Lincoln County for Universal Cable Production, UCP. They do USA Network productions. That's the story of Billy the Kid and Bull and Lawrence Murphy and the Santa Fe Ring, which is the first sort of crime syndicate west of the Mississippi. I love that kind of stuff.
Man, that's you've got some nice irons in the fire for sure. And you know, for somebody that loves these old westerns, I cannot wait to see everything you've got up and
Thank
coming.
You.
So Robert, thanks so much for coming on the show, talking to us about your work. It's been just such a pleasure having you on. I'm glad we're, you know, able to bring this one into a landing this time. I think as we said before, the third time's the charm. But thank you so much.
Oh well, thank you so much, man. It's been really nice talking with you, and thank you for spreading the gospel of these books, and I think people will enjoy them. You know, I ran into a guy in the bookstore yesterday just out of the blue, told me he picked that up, and he said, "Man, I love this book." And I said, "Well, it makes me feel good because I wrote it."
That's fantastic. Hey, and for the listeners, And I encourage you to check out Robert Knott's latest book, Revelation. Check out all of them. I finished it a few weeks ago myself. Loved it. And, you know, it's hard to imagine, but if you're unfamiliar with Appaloosa and the other works in this series, get into them. You're going to have a lot of fun catching up. And also watch for my latest release, Everglade, which is scheduled for publication from All Due Respect Books on July 1st. This will be the fifth and final volume in the Selena series. And until then, the publisher is making the first volume, Selena, available for only 99 cents for the e-copy. And this podcast is sponsored tonight by Down and Out Books, celebrating 6 years of award-winning crime fiction. Down and Out Books at www.downandoutbooks.com. And until next time, this is Greg Barth with Noir on the Radio. And Noir on the Radio is a copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC.